Welcome back to our Tanakh Study Center series on Navim Rishonim. I'd like to begin with an apology for not sending Shurim out the last several weeks. Hopefully we'll get back to a normal schedule starting next week. Today we're going to have a very short shir on the last Prakim of Melachim Aleph to explain the downfall of Ahav. Next week we'll begin with a more detailed set of Shurim of Melachim Bet and the connection between Eliyahu and Elisha. To explain the downfall of Ahav, I'd like to take an analogy from the Parsha of the King in Sefer Devarim. In chapter 17 in Sefer Devarim, we have three laws that the king has to follow. He can't have too many wives, lo yabed lo nashim. He can't have too much horses, lo yabed lo susim. Can't have too big of an army. And finally, lo yabed lo kesef ezahav. He can't take too much wealth, too much gold and silver, so that wealth would not get to his head. Doesn't mean he can't have any of these things, but he can't overdo himself in these three realms. Those three laws, in many ways, can explain what happens to Ahav. The first set of stories about Ahav and Eliyahu all relate to Yezebel, his relationship with Yezebel, and the influence of the 400 Nevi'ei Baal and the 450 Nevi'ei Asherah, the prophets of Baal and Asherah that brought all this terrible culture to the Jewish people that Eliyahu was trying to fight. In that sense, Ahav, even though he was a very popular king, and that treaty with Yezebel and Sidon brought prosperity to his country and made him so popular, it's exactly that influence that Eliyahu is trying to fight. We explained in our last year that was why Eliyahu stopped the rain, and that's why Eliyahu brings back the rain. That's why they have the showdown with the Baal on Har Carmel. Eliyahu was hoping that after that showdown, the Jewish people would recognize God, as they do momentarily at the end of that, in the end of chapter 18, when they say Hashem Hu Elohim, when they declare that they recognize God. But the next day, even though he was hoping that Yezebel would be rejected by the people, Yezebel issues an edict the next day that there's a death warrant out for Eliyahu. Eliyahu has to run away, and all of his efforts seem to go up in vain. We'll return to that story when we study Elisha and Eliyahu in our next shir, because that background will explain the difference between Elisha and Eliyahu and their approaches to how to educate or how to influence the people. There's two other stories, though, which we did not discuss in our previous shir. The one in chapter 20, where there's a war with Ben-Hadad, with the nation of Aram, which would be Syria today. And in that battle, God is willing to help Ahav win his victory. So if I want to relate that to the parsha of the king about lo yabed lo susim, not to have too big of an army, in the sense that having too big of an army would cause haughtiness of the leader and cause him to depend upon himself and not upon God. If you look at the details in chapter 20, a Navi comes to the king and tells him, I'm willing to help you in this battle against Aram, especially because the people of Aram, seeing this battle, a proof of God. When Ahav wins the first battle, the people in Aram attribute this to the fact that the God of Israel is a God in the mountains, but he's not a God in the plains. They have this understanding that gods control certain areas. They're geographic in many ways. And therefore, when they go to war the next time, they fight him in the open plain instead of in the mountain range. God tells Ahav through his Navi, and it's interesting to note that this Navi is not Eliyahu. This Navi remains anonymous, but it's not Eliyahu, because Eliyahu only seems to come in events that relate to Yezebel. But they win the second battle with God's help, and God was hoping that Ahav would recognize the hand of God even in the second battle as well. And had he recognized the hand of God, he would have not only thanked God for that victory, he would have continued and completed the defeat of Ben-Hadad and not made a peace treaty with him at the end. Instead, Ahav makes his peace treaty with Ben-Hadad and prefers to have open commerce with Ben-Hadad in Damascus, as described in the end of chapter 20 in verses 34 and 35, when instead of killing Hadad and finishing off the battle with him, he prefers a political solution to the conflict. God's not happy with that. It's not clear exactly why, but it seems that God wanted to show everyone that this was a battle against the recognition of God, and because Ben-Hadad was going on religious terms in this battle, it was important to totally defeat his army. And making a peace treaty instead, even though it might have some political ramifications, it might have been wise, God was very angry at him, as described when the Navi confronts Ahav later on and tells him that you took the person that I gave to you, the prisoner of war that I gave to you, instead of punishing him like you were supposed to, you let him get away. And because of that, the people of Israel didn't see the hand of God in this battle. Therefore, ultimately, you're going to lose to Aram, which happens within several decades. If you read the end of chapter 20, in Pasuk Mem Bet, we see exactly that point, where the Navi tells Ahav, V'yomer elav kol mar Hashem, yan shilacht et ish chermi miyad. You sent the person that I was against they had a cherem against, referring to Ben-Hadad, because of that, you're going to die, because you should have had him executed, your nation is going to fall to that nation, and that prediction comes true, because ultimately, the people of Aram, the nation of Aram, is going to defeat Israel in battle. The next story in chapter 21 is going to be on the third realm of the commandment of the king, and that is the law of lo yabelo kesef hazav, not to amass too much wealth. It's upon the king should not have too much wealth because he shouldn't become so greedy, only the wealth needed to run his country. And here we have a story where Ahav himself wants to buy a certain field from a person named Navot, and Navot's not willing to sell him the field. First of all, the fact that Ahav is not able to force the purchase of that field shows you he's not such a bad guy. It's only Izebel's influence that she tells Ahav, you know, you go to sleep, I'll take care of this for you, I'll teach you how to run a kingdom. Ahav, not being aware of what she does, she hires two false witnesses to bring charges against Navot, that he blasphemized against God. There's a court case. There's a judgment. Because of these two false witnesses, Navot is found guilty. He's executed, and his belongings go to the king. And in that way, Izebel was able to get the field for Ahab that he wanted. What's interesting about this story is that we see, despite all the censure of the people by the Navi for how bad they are, we still have Batei Mishpat, we still have Jewish courts. People can still be tried for blasphemizing against the God of Israel and against the king. We have a court system where we have Edim, there's witnesses. Now, Izebel misuses that court system and takes advantage of it for the king. So we see there's a very certain amount of corruption involved. On the other hand, we see that the people are not as bad as it may appear to be when you first read these events in Sefer Melachim about the influence of the Nevi Baal and Asherah on the people. Eliyahu later comes and becomes very angry with Ahab for what he did. He should have been aware of what Izebel was up to. Again, Ahab himself didn't do it, but the fact that he took the field of Navot and let Izebel trump up charges and then took the field from the person who was executed on these false charges, that gets Eliyahu very angry. And after Eliyahu tells him that you're going to die because of this, Ahab actually does tshuva, he repents, after being rebuked by Eliyahu. We'll read that in Pasuk Chavzayin at the end of that parak. Vayikishmo Ahab et advarim ha'ela, vayikra b'gadav, vayasam shaka b'sarov, vayatzom, vayashka b'sak vayelet at. He rips his clothes and he dresses in sackcloth and he fasts. And then God tells Eliyahu, look, Nachav has shown very much remorse, and therefore he's not going to punish him right away. I'm going to bring down his kingdom only later on. And therefore, God's going to give Ahab several more years of life. His final punishment is going to come in chapter 22 when they go to war against Aram. So if we put all these three things together, chapter 22 will be the final battle where Ahab dies. And we see they're fighting not in Israel, they're fighting up in the Gilad, not in the Shomron. After these three stories, the story of Eliyahu and Izebel in relation to the Nevi Baal Nashirah that Eliyahu confronts on Har Carmel, and after the story of the battle with Aram in chapter 20, and after the story of taking the field of Navot in chapter 21, Ahav is finally going to meet his death in chapter 22. 3 years later, there's going to be a battle, and it seems that the point that the Navi is making in chapter 22 is that even though there's a logical decision for Ahab to go to war, and even though he's going to war together with Yehoshaphat, the Navi sees the hand of God in this apparently unwise political decision to go to war at this time. And in that battle, Ahab meets his death. To prove how unwise this battle was, if you look at the details of the battle that takes place, the battle ends as soon as news is received that Ahab died. If this was a real war, a war where the Jewish people were really in danger, the war would have continued even if the king dies. But because this war is a war of expansion, a war that wasn't really fought because the Jewish people were in any specific danger, but rather Ahab wants to take back territory that he thought belonged to him and Aram thought belonged to them, he's able to get the army together, but the second the king who decided to go to that war is killed in battle, the people are very happy and say, everyone, go back home. If you look in chapter 22, verse 36, Perachabet Pasek Lamed Vav, there it says, Vayavor Harinaba Machaneh, there was joy in the camp after they heard the news that Ahab was killed, Kavua Shemesh Lemor, when it got dark already, saying, Ish Elirov Ish Alarzo, let everyone go back to his city and back to his land. And it seems the happiness was not only on the side of the Jews, but also on the side of the Syrians and the side of Aram. This seemed to be a war between kings that were fighting over their pride or over how great each kingdom was. But once the king of Israel was killed, everyone says, okay, no point in battling, let's go home. And both sides are very happy to go back to the land and stop the bloodshed. From a prophetic point of view, the death of Ahav in this battle is ironic because it relates to all the three events that we saw before. He loses to Ben-Hadad, as described in chapter 20. He should have killed Ben-Hadad in battle. He didn't punish him like God wanted him to in the beginning. He made a peace treaty with him, and instead, that backfires on him. And that same Ben-Hadad defeats him in battle. And that's how he dies in chapter 22, just as Navi had predicted in the end of chapter 20. When he dies, they wash off the chariot, the blood of the chariot, in the field of Navot. And that's a punishment for the fact that Ahab had taken the field of Navot, as described in chapter 21. And the overall punishment of Ahav, and the reason he got himself into this entire mess in the first place, was because of his marriage to Izebel, that brought this influence of Baal and Asherah into his kingdom. And even though that brought success to the Jewish people, Ahav finally loses the battle and doesn't listen to the Navi, and all the Navim that tried to persuade him to go to battle, and doesn't listen to Michal ben Imla, the other Navi, in chapter 22, who tells him not to go to battle. That relates back to the fact that Ahav didn't listen to Eliyahu. So the three major sins of Lo Yebelo Nashim, of taking Izebel, Lo Yebelo Kesev Ezahav, with the field with Navot, and Lo Yebelo Susim, in his battle with Aram, in chapter 20, all those three sins come back and lead to the death of Ahav, as explained in the end of chapter 22. Now recall, the death of Ahav in the eyes of the people of Israel was a terrible tragedy. He was a very popular leader. The purpose of these chapters in Sefer Melachim is coming to see the hand of God in these events and coming to explain that the downfall of Ahav was because of his lack of respect for what the Nevim, what the prophets were telling him, not listening not only to Eliyahu, but also to Michal ben Imla, and also to the other Nevim who were telling him about how he should run his country. Ahav's successors, his two sons, don't seem to learn the lesson, and they continue in Ahav's bad ways, and it will take another decade or so until the house of Ahav is finally punished with the revolt of Yehu. That will be the topic of our next year, where we talk about why was it that God tells Eliyahu three things to do in response to his failure in Har Carmel. Why does he appoint Hazael the king of Aram, and why he appoints Yehu to become the new king, and why he appoints Elisha to become the Navi instead of him. All those topics we'll deal with in our next year. Again, today's year we simply wanted to begin our catch up with the material and explain the last four chapters of Melachim Aleph to understand why there's so many different stories about Ahav and how they all come to explain why such a popular king, who the people respected so much, brought so much prosperity to the Jewish people, why did he finally die in such a tragic way in the battle against Aram, and what was the underlying reason for his death and the fall of that success. The Navi in Sefer Melachim relates this to the fact that Ahav didn't listen to neither to Eliyahu, nor to Michal ben Imla, nor to the Navi, who told him how to fight the battle against Aram, in chapter 20. In our next year, we'll begin Melachim Bet, but to appreciate those events that happened in the beginning of Melachim Bet, we have to go back and understand what is God telling Eliyahu to do at Har Sinai, the three commandments that Eliyahu receives to appoint Elisha the Navi, and to appoint Hazael the new king in Aram, and to appoint Yehu to begin the rebellion. For the next year, please review the first three or four chapters of Melachim Bet.